The Thursday, April 22nd, 2004 meeting of the Boulder County Board of County Commissioners is back in session. Present Commissioner Stewart and Danish Commissioner Mayer will be joining us momentarily. We're going to start the business meeting since we are running an hour and a quarter late. We'll start with the consent items, A through Z. Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next, are there any personnel actions today? Seeing none, we'll move on. Third, a statement from the board on the Rocky Flats refuge proposals. Ms. Udy.
60-second explanation, Jane Udy. We need to have these comments approved by the board today. They're the formal comments of the commissioners due to Fish and Wildlife on the use of the Rocky Flats refuge. Comments for their comprehensive conservation plan and environmental impact statement. It's a seven-pager, but it has 4 points. First of all, we're asking the Department of Energy identify which lands and which areas of the refuge it's going to control that needs to be maintained by DOE and not turned over to Fish and Wildlife, and how they're going to keep the public out. The second is that funding for Fish and Wildlife needs to be increased to reflect the increased responsibilities they're going to have in managing a refuge as a former nuclear weapons site. The third part is that adequate sampling of the buffer zone where people would be under the Fish and Wildlife refuge and where the public access would be needs to be adequately characterized and sampled so we know really what's out there. And the fourth is that public access should not be allowed in any ecologically sensitive areas. Our staff from Open Space thinks that some of the areas on the north side of the refuge are ecologically sensitive in the riparian areas, and they're suggesting that there's no access there. We have consistently supported Fish and Wildlife's alternatives A and C.
And we have, we are also saying that we favor that once those areas are identified, that a robust fencing be put around the areas that DOE should retain. This became an issue largely because at the last meeting of the Rocky Flats Coalition of Local Governments, spokesman from DOE started talking about, quote, institutional controls, whatever that means, as a possible alternative to fencing out an area that, in fact, is going to be left with considerable contamination in place, either on the surface or underground. So, could I have a motion?
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next, a recommendation for the appointment of Jamie R. Lee to the Workforce Development Board.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next, from the Budget Office, 2004 Budget Supplemental Request from the Clerk and Recorder's Office for $1,754,318 for the purchase of a voting system.
Margaret Parrish, Budget Office, and you have before you the request from the Clerk and Recorder's Office for the voting system. You can see it's broken down for you on the cover memo, the portion for the Hart InterCivic contract, the equipment they'd like to purchase, which is 39 PCs, copier, 7 different printers, LCD projector, the stand-up stock picker, which moves the ballots around, and then lastly, the contingency fee that totaled the amount that you said. I've also noted for you at the bottom in the source that they are anticipating revenues of $794,808 to offset the cost of this. And additionally, I've listed the 2005 ongoing budget impacts for you for the software maintenance, as well as some maintenance that we currently know about for the scanner, and we're still looking for the envelope scanner maintenance amounts. Additionally, the DRE terminals or whatever you decide for that will be another cost for this in the future. And as you can see, everyone's here from the Clerk and Recorder's Office to answer questions on the cost and if you'd like to make any changes.
I personally wouldn't want to appropriate right now the contingency fee. I think that if contingency expenditures are required, that they can, we can know about them and do them later. But I think appropriating it is just a signal to the contractor that there's a little more money out there. So.
So your recommendation?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Zero or the 100,000?
The question is, are we? I think we're approving a contract here. And is it for a fixed sum, or is this still something to be negotiated?
No, the contract is as is, and there are, in fact, we've specifically taken out anything that's said estimated. So it is what it is.
It's the $1,365,270, right?
If
the contract
less,
itself.
If that's less the contingency fees, yes. And the the contract.
The contract is that, and the contingency is there.
And exclusive of what the county.
Well, there are other generic equipment
purchases
that the county was going to purchase.
Just a couple of comments here. I know there was concern from the public about seeing the actual documents. And just as a matter of form here, I know that our business meetings aren't public hearings, but I do think there should be some way of taking comment from the public and having our documents, whenever possible, be made public. I assume some of this was going down to the final minute.
We were doing this up until Friday, and my understanding was that a contract under negotiation wasn't going to be public.
I guess I would just like to see if, I think we know some of the items that are of real public interest, if there'd be some way of making we know the documents are in electronic form, I assume the one we're about to sign it. If there wouldn't be some way to have those made public so that, not that, I don't think anyone's afraid of what's in there. And I know in the day-to-day work, you're just trying to get, how do I get through so I can start getting going the system. But I think it is important to have public confidence, and a lot of that is just showing everything.
And I'll defer to the county attorney on this, but if it's all public material now, we have it in electronic format, we can put it on our website. We have no problem.
Yeah, I'm just thinking in the future, a couple of things about this I would have probably liked to have done differently. I think this is a meeting we should have held at night and not during the day, just my personal feeling, which I think for items of high public visibility would be a good idea. And then making all the documents possible available ahead of time, I think, would be a good idea.
And if we're kind of, looking backward, probably the hearing we held this morning was essentially the hearing we held 3 months ago. It was just, it was the same thing. So if we were going to do one hearing on the substantive issue that was to be considered, I agree that could be something in the evening. But I think what we said at the first hearing was that we would then do another hearing when the contract was done to look at issues in the contract, which I don't think was what actually the hearing this morning became. But
no, it was a
rehash.
It was, again, a policy issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yes?
I would just note that in connection with Commissioner Mayer's comments, the business meeting is a public meeting, not a public hearing. However, of course, it's up to the board's discretion to accept input from the public at any business meeting item. And the moment that the materials that are being requested for action of the board are posted with the board, in other words, are accepted by your clerk's office, at that point, those materials become public materials and available to the public.
When did this contract arrive at this office then?
I believe it was Tuesday.
Tuesday? So it's been 48 hours.
When it arrived at our office, it hadn't gone through the contract approval process yet. So it had to go to the county attorney's office, risk management and finance before we can accept it. So although it was delivered here, we went ahead and sent it out for internal distribution.
So when has it been delivered here and become a public document?
Well, when it's delivered, when the final document is delivered to you for your action, then it's a public document.
Cool.
So
it may have gotten here yesterday afternoon or yesterday morning. I'm not sure who delivered it. Mike is the one that receives that. And at that time, it was copied and made public.
Well, may I make a suggestion then? And that is that I suspect we're going to approve this here in a couple of minutes. Why don't we just say, I'll sign it on Tuesday morning, and if the public has something they want to bring to our attention, we have a perfect, they can look it up on the internet, we have a perfectly good way to send us email, and we can make that one last chance to give people a few days to take a look at the thing. That did become an issue, I think that would be reasonable, don't you?
Well, as long as, because I don't, I don't want to hold up a couple of
I'm a bit uncomfortable with that. Okay. That, you know, here's a document that came, it matters on something that's really important to the people of Boulder County. They did want to see it. They want to pick at it. I understand that. But, you know, that's fine. Every so often we do learn something from that process, and I think it's worthwhile putting it up there and letting folks have a look at it.
Well, then I don't think we should approve it.
Okay, well, then let's just wait to do the approval.
But I do think if we take testimony,
yes,
it should not be on the general issue that is already decided. It should be on any specific in the contract that someone wanted to make.
That's right. And I'm not interested
in issue of
that. I'm not interested in hearing testimony at the meeting on Tuesday. I am interested in if they're written comments.
Okay, I think that's a good thing to do.
And I mean, I'm very serious about that. I just want to open the hearing for it.
Could we do this? Could we, you know, give people till? Would you feel comfortable at noontime tomorrow signing it if we put out a notice that?
That's a pretty fast whistle. How about
what does that mean? What's the purpose of if Paul is he? Are we approving any signs no matter what is heard then? Or
well, if we get significant comment that in this case the two of you feel should be brought up tomorrow or next Tuesday, then you could do that.
Well, I would think if we were going to do that, then it's really a matter of waiting until Tuesday to approve it.
Okay.
And I think I like your idea, Paul, that if there are any concerns, that those concerns should be indicated in writing and submitted to this office and the clerk's office, and that then on Tuesday we'd approve the execution of the contract.
Yeah, we go ahead and do that if we're satisfied with whatever those statements are, and I think email is perfectly acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
As meaning writing.
So it's not really going to be a public hearing?
No. I think that as far as the policy issues go, I'm really not interested in rehashing those again. If somebody wants to write yet another email, that's their business, but I don't have to pay attention to it.
But
if somebody has specific comments about specific clauses in the contract or particular wording, that's a fit subject to discuss.
And we can do that as the board, based on the written material.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the only thing is, to be perfectly honest here, if we're going to do this, this is going to delay things by about 3 days.
The vendors are ready to come in by Monday or Tuesday.
And I'm sorry, the what?
Our vendors are ready to come in and start looking at our system and getting ready to, you know.
Well, you know, if that's the case, maybe we should have had that contract over here a few days earlier.
I personally,
I get very uncomfortable, I guess would be the most tactful way to say it, to say, this just arrived yesterday, you got to make the most important decision of your life in the next 20 minutes in order to deal with the convenience of a bunch of other people. Well, the answer is, don't push me.
Okay, that's fine, and we'll do it whatever your pleasure
Thank
is.
You.
But I just need to know.
And I personally would just do it today, period. But I also understand the comments that are made by the other members of the board. So
we'll tell the vendor that it's going to be probably until Tuesday before it's actually signed, and subject to any potential changes that we have to send down to Austin to work out.
That's right.
I'll have to be.
Okay. Because I am not going to be available on Tuesday. I'm testifying down at the legislation, and Nancy is not available also on Tuesday. She is working on the statewide voter reg RFP. So we are not available on Tuesday.
Well, what do we want to do about that then?
Tom will be available. And we will make sure that somebody is available.
Could I raise a question, please?
Yes.
What sort of notification would be required on this? How would people know that they had an opportunity to make comment on the contract?
I think they're still in the hall. So.
Well, I assume that we could put out a press release and such to let people know that this is available, and if they want to comment on it, they could. I think what I'm weighing here in my own mind, to be perfectly honest, is the although in some ways I wish things had been done otherwise, things were done in good faith. It's not like the clerk's office delayed this.
No, I understand that. But, it's a question of one of the things we heard in the public hearing today is people wanted to examine the contract. Well, I mean, it may be, I think I'm sophisticated enough to realize they were looking for something which would take their position. Democracy, though.
No, I understand that, just as long as we understand that we're pushing back this mock election by another 3 days. And as long as that doesn't... because Paul, I really do have the same concerns, but I just want to make sure that the elections division can do their job. That's all. But I think 3 days being what it is, that a mock election will still go forward, and I think giving people the additional days to look at the lengthy agreement probably doesn't hurt.
Well, Paul, I think it would be best since they are back in the room for you to explain the process that we're going to use.
Okay, the process is this, that the contract arrived at this office and became a public document, as near as we can tell, late Tuesday. That's a very short whistle, we think. We think the points made by testimony in the earlier hearing today were appropriate, that the public gets a chance to look at it and to comment on that. We are not going to open it up to a full public hearing. However, what we will do is we will post the contract on our website. It will be available for public examination, and we will take written comment either in paper form at this office or in the form of emails. We will then consider those when we make the final consideration on it at the 10:30 business meeting on Tuesday.
Which will not be a hearing.
It will not be a hearing. Is that, have I understood that clearly? That is the effect of the motion I'm about to make. So moved.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Agenda item number six.
Back to the supplemental request, which was what started all of this.
Yes.
Would it be something you would want to approve today and take out the contingency fund, or do you want to hold this over?
Well, I think we can.
Yeah,
we've approved the purchase of this equipment. We are going to move forward with it. It's simply a matter of what does the contract say. So I would move that we approve this supplemental in the amount of $1,526,120.
Okay. I would second that.
And I would, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Now, I would move that we table the award of RFP 443703, New Voting Tabulation System to Hart InterCivic, to 10:30 Tuesday.
I think we've awarded the bid. We've already done that. That was our previous action.
Okay.
So it's just it's the question of the approval of the contract.
Well, this is simply an administrative matter.
Right.
Larry.
Is that correct?
Do we have to, if we just took no action, couldn't we just bring it up again on?
The action that, the motion that was made at the end of your public hearing earlier was to approve the award of the bid. So that sort of presaged the item 6A here. But the contract itself has not been approved by the board, and that's the matter that would be put over.
Okay, so the bid award is appropriate to vote on now. Could I have a motion?
So moved.
We've already done it.
On the business meeting.
Yeah, do we have to do it on the
It'd be good form.
Okay, second.
And moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. You see, that's one of those double voting things.
It is.
Worry about.
We voted twice now.
Yeah.
Okay. Which one counts? Both.
I'm going to ask for a recount.
I know.
was born in Chicago. I view this as a matter of living in a state of grace when it comes to voting twice, you know. Anyway, the next item is a request for unbudgeted capital outlay for the purchase of a laser printer cut sheet cutter, $4,684.50 from the county clerk's office.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. From the sheriff's office, a request to donate outdated radio equipment to Ouray County.
So moved. I know that Jenny has her little stamp of approval on this, so...
Okay, could I have a second?
I will second that.
A sister county project.
Right.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. From Head Start, a grant application to the Administration for Children and Families to continue Head Start funding at $1,074,459 with a quest to waive administrative costs, $56,968.86.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Don't like waiving fees. From the Land Use Department, determination whether to call up docket SPR-04-024, Peterson Residence, for public hearing. Whitmore.
Doug Whitmore, Land Use Department. The department issued a determination letter on this project on April 8, 2004. Conditionally approving the 3,528 square foot residence at 520 Millionaire Drive. This is essentially a revision to an SPR that came through last year, in which staff approved a 3,590 square foot residence at approximately the same location. This is a revision that changes the driveway and a little bit of a difference on the house. It still meets the height restriction and glazing restrictions imposed by staff during the previous review, and is similarly sized to the houses in the neighborhood. And today we received one comment letter in the public comment period indicating that the house is too large and will be an eyesore. Therefore, we're requesting that you determine whether or not a public hearing will be required for this docket.
What's your pleasure?
Do you think there are any substantive issues that would occur at a hearing that have not been considered?
I don't think so. Staff did an adequate review previously last year with this one, and this is a very similar request, so we don't think there's any outstanding conditions that need to be addressed.
Well, I don't see any reason to call it. I'm sorry, Don. Can't schedule more of your time for you, Doug.
I'll be back, don't worry. Thanks.
Okay, so do we need a motion not to call up? Okay,
no.
We'll just ignore then. That brings us to the end of the items. Are there additional items to the put on the business meeting agenda?
None that I know of.
Are there scheduling and communications items? So what we have here is a failure to further communicate. I'll close the business meeting, and we will move on to our 11:30 item, and I apologize to the people who may have been here for it, but we're running a bit behind today because we had a fairly important matter at the 9 o'clock item. The business before us is from the Land Use Department, a public hearing on docket SE-0408, Castens Limit LR, subdivision exemption for a lot recognition to recognize two building lots of 1.38 acres and 2.94 acres. The land is currently to be combined as one building lot in accordance with Article 18-121, parenthesis B, parenthesis 2, parenthesis A, et sequence of the Land Use Code. The proposed property is located at 888 and 908 Highway 7 Business Route, Allens Park, in Section 25, Township 3 North, Range 73 West. Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Commissioners. David Callahan with Land Use Staff. Mr. Chairman, you just read into the record a central issue that I'd like to clarify before I go any further into a PowerPoint presentation. And that is, when our staff first learned of a concern by Mrs. Castens, it was broached along the lines of the merger regulation that you just cited. And so that's the way we advertise this, because, and Phil, I had the opportunity to actually do the work on this case. That's what we thought was going on. In actual fact, you'll see further in the document that I've given you all of the deeds back to 1958, which show unequivocally that these two parcels that you're being asked to consider to split today have been on one deed since 1958. So this is not a merger question of the 93 land use code, but rather just a simple request to split a parcel of land that's been on one deed since 58. With that, excuse me.
So basically, since 1958, this would have been considered one lot.
That's correct. In 58, you know, the zoning at that time allowed 1 acre parcels. In 65, it went to 5 acre parcels. In 78, it went to 35 acre parcels under the zoning code. So with that, I'll turn to a PowerPoint presentation and give you a good overview of this one. This property does have two addresses, two parcel numbers, two tax IDs, and in talking with Beverly Castens, the applicant, just before the meeting began, I understand she has been getting separate tax notices. It is in the forestry zoning district. Generally, just a little north of Ferncliff, a little south of Allen's Park, as you see here in red. And then you can see that the county's records still show two parcels here. So there's one parcel number and tax ID for this, another for this one. But again, it's all on one deed. And so the our understanding is the lot lines you see in red on this aerial photo would be the current building lot. You can see there is an existing home I'll show you a better picture of from ground view in just a moment. But I wanted you to get a sense that the vast majority of this property is very steep, and again, you'll see that in the next slide. And the remaining flat portion is basically a riparian area with a creek flowing through it. Here's the existing home, a little over 1,000 square feet. You can see how the property gets steep to this side, and then as you walk to the west, here's the creek. And the one area of this property that's basically open right behind the home. And then as you move further on, it's just a riparian area with a stream through it. What doesn't become real obvious on these slides, and I'll try and show you one in just a moment, is that there is about 15 to 20 feet along this fence line, all along this property. Here we go. There is relative open area, but that's about it. You know, the front yard setback in the forestry district is 15 feet. So by the time you hit the required setback, you're into the riparian area as near as we can deduce. And there is this one small area that we don't think is sufficient in size to have a house and the required septic system and not cause an inordinate amount of environmental damage to the riparian area. But it is a relatively open area here on the far west of the property. We did do the usual referral comments. I handed out to you the last referral that we received just recently, so that bumped the numbers from 8 to 9 of people that have no conflict, or in two cases, as I recall, actually are supporting this split. There was one adjacent property owner that's opposed. Our own public health group notes that we don't have existing information on any individual sewage disposal system on this property, and that will need to be remedied regardless of what you decide today. And then our Parks and Open Space staff noted the environmental concerns for water quality, and all of the referrals are in your packet so that you can see in more detail what we learned. But basically, the staff came down to the understanding that there are really two problems in reviewing the criteria here. Water quality, environmental concerns are very clearly a problem, and then it really seems to conflict with at least four policy statements of the comprehensive plan. So we really can't find a reason to recommend approval for this, and are therefore recommending denial. And that concludes all that I have for you, but I'm here for any questions that you may have.
So, David, if I understand this correctly, this had nothing to do with the 1993 merger regulations, but would have been considered merged as of when? As the single deed in 1958?
Yes.
Okay.
And so even though it was merged on a single deed in 1958, sort of the implication of the comments you had is it's sort of been treated as two properties even so. It's got two addresses.
Well, and I guess if I may follow up to Mr. Mayor's statement, I'm getting some feedback here, pardon me. As presumably from 58 to 65, since the zoning would have allowed 1 acre lot sizes, they could have split this up into two parcels. But from 65 on, the minimum lot size has been larger than this current parcel. You know, this is just a little over 4 acres. The minimum lot size in 65 was 5 acres, and in 78 was 35 acres. So since 65, you couldn't have split this up properly without going through this request, the subdivision exemption request.
Okay, further questions for staff?
I do know Ms. Kastens is an audience, as well as her stepson, Frank May, and they'd both like to speak.
Okay. This matter has been set for public hearing. Our practice on land use matters of this sort is to hear first from the applicant, and any agents the applicant may have will then take testimony from the public at large. And then if the applicant wishes to comment on information that's been produced from that testimony, the applicant will be given one final chance to comment. That said, the ground rules of the public hearing are the official record of this meeting is a tape recording, and therefore we will need you to testify at the podium, and we will need you to state your name and address. Having said that, I'll open the public hearing. The applicant, please.
I'm Beverly Kastens, and I bought this property in 1998, and I bought it for my daughter and her husband, Frank May, and they had lived on this property for 2 years before I purchased it. They were renters, and the people that owned the property decided to sell it because they moved to Georgia. And so they had told my daughter and son-in-law that if they ever sold it, they would give them first choice. So I have some papers I would like to hand out. This was kind of a gift to my daughter and her husband, so that they would have a place to live in Colorado since they love it here so much, and that if we had two parcels, which we thought we had bought, we would have an option of building a house on the second parcel too and renting out the first parcel, or if there were ever financial problems, they could sell the second parcel and still have their home. And that was kind of the objective in buying this, to give them some security. Okay, I'd like to point out some things that were my understanding when I bought this that seem to really be in question at this time. This first letter that you see on the top is a letter from the people that owned the property. And they were telling my daughter and her husband, we were trying to come up with a price, what I should pay for this. And I've highlighted what our decision was. It says we talked about $112,000 for parcel one, which includes the house, the carport, and the barn. It says according to the tax evaluation for parcel two, at that time it was valued at $35,000. So I paid $112,000 for parcel one that has the buildings on it. And I paid $35,000 for parcel two that was undeveloped, which was adjacent to the property.
And you've been paying your taxes on two separate tax bills?
Yes.
For parcel one.
And I had those included in here. I brought this along so you could see this. So that's the first document I wanted you to see, where I paid two different prices for two pieces of land when I bought this. Okay, the next piece of paper here, I thought, since I'm not familiar with Colorado property, and it seemed really high to me coming from Kansas, that I better find out what this property is worth. So I had an appraiser come in, and his name was James Avery. I don't know whether you're familiar with him or not. But the next paper, or two papers, are the report he filled out for me, because I wanted to make sure that I knew what I was getting. So on the first page, you'll see where he classified this as suburban. It's just outside of Allen's Park and just outside of Ferncliff, just like Mr. Callahan said. It's on a business route, so, you know, we're really in almost in the city, but not quite. We're just outside of both cities.
I'm familiar with the area.
The average down here, the next highlight, the average home in that area runs from 1 to 10 acres. And by the way, this house that we bought was built in 1924, and it was added on in 1957. Okay. It says that this is a commercial area in Allen's Park. Vacant land is a few building sites, open space, national forest, and some undeveloped areas. Subject located in small mountain community of Allen's Park. Okay. I'd like to skip some of the other highlighted areas and come back to those in just a minute. On the next page, the appraiser's report, if you look in the right-hand corner, up here under note, it says subject is two separate parcels that are both building sites, therefore makes land value higher than would be typical for this type of property. And so, you know, I am thinking when I bought this that I had two separate parcels. The appraiser thought that I had two separate parcels. He compared this property to other property in the area to get an evaluation on it. And I've highlighted the site. He had trouble finding a site that was around them that was as large as the two parcels put together. And so he cited, if you look, his first comparison, he's comparing it to a little over 1 acre in property. The next one is 0.2 acres, and the next one is a half of an acre. So we had trouble finding a site that we could compare this size of a site to at that time. Okay. On the next paper over is the surveyor's map and comments. And it gives the legal description for parcel one and the legal description for parcel two. And I guess I have a hard time understanding, if it's all one parcel, why don't I have one legal description for the property? I just have a hard time understanding that. I have two different addresses on the property. And I'd like to skip the highlighted area at the bottom and come back to that in just a minute. The next page shows the surveyor's map with two separate parcels. It shows parcel one, where the house and other buildings are located on it, and it shows parcel two, the undeveloped parcel of land. And it makes note of where parcel one begins and where parcel two begins, with the physical measurements and so forth on the property. Okay. Then I'd like to show you the tax statements I've been getting since I bought it for the last 5 years. I have been getting two statements on each one on each piece of property, showing how the property has gained in value compared with how it was the year before. And you can see each one's listed separately with a separate address, a separate legal description. But up here in the right-hand corner, it says M/L per deed. And when I've done a little research, multiple listing is what I figured out that means. If I'm wrong, you need to let me know. That there are multiple listings for the property on one deed. You know, and it looks to me, just as a layperson, that at the time that deed was issued, it should have been issued. I should have had two separate deeds on two separate pieces of property, and instead one deed was issued that listed both properties on the same deed. And it looks like that's really been confusion. So you might just leave through. I know you don't care how much I paid in taxes, but you know, I know you do care that each one has been sent to me separately, not combined, but I've got all the years here of tax statements where I've paid the taxes on the two separate pieces of property, and you can see how they've classified those properties, and I'm very pleased with the way the value of the property has increased. You know, I feel that it has been a good purchase for me. One of my concerns here is that the appraiser and evidently the courthouse, everyone thought it was two separate properties, and I paid a higher amount for the property because we thought it was two separate properties. I paid higher taxes because I thought it was two separate properties. And if it's combined into one, that's going to be of less value to us. Now, let's go back, because these are just tax statements. I just wanted you to see what I was getting each year on the property. Okay, now, I want to go back and talk about drainage a little bit on the property. I think maybe that might be a little misleading also. On the second page of the report that I gave you, down in the middle of the page on the right-hand side, it shows the land as level and sloping, which it is. You know, there's an area off of Business Highway 7 that is level, then there's a stream, and then behind it is a slope that goes up to a higher peak. We own the property up to the rim, the top rim of that mountain behind us. Okay. The appraiser said that the drainage was adequate on the property. He went back to other reports, and if you'll look under here, FEMA spatial flood hazardous area, it is not. He marked no. He cited the maps that he used and the date of those maps in 95. Another area here I wanted to call your attention to in terms of drainage. On the Flatiron Surveyor map, which lists the legal description of the property, says Flatiron Surveyor at the very bottom. It says the subject property is located in Zone C, the area of minimal flooding, according to FEMA flood insurance rate map. Community panel number, and it gives that number, dated July the 15th, 1988. Okay. Do you have any questions for me? In terms of, Frank has lived there, my son-in-law, for 7 years now, and there are probably some questions that he can answer better than I can. I know the business side of it. Beg your pardon?
There's one question, and maybe this goes to Barbara Andrews more than to you, is when I look at the tax statements here, okay, it seems like both properties are being assessed at the residential rate, and my understanding is that if you have an independent lot that's vacant, it would be assessed at the business rate, 29%.
Well, I think Commissioner Stewart might have more knowledge in that area than I would.
But that's correct, and I saw that too. I actually, I just could
kind of computed the tax that you'd be paying on that other lot if it were not considered as combined with the other one, and it'd be $1,300, $1,360 a year on the undeveloped lot in taxes rather than the estimate here of $391. So
it's confusing to me here because on one hand, the land is valued more than the land that's already developed, but it's being taxed at a rate as if it was an existing lot used for residential purposes.
And it's classified as family residential land, the parcel two that has nothing on it.
Yeah, but I didn't, having relatives of mine who bought land in the mountains and had a lot of experience with this.
Is that right?
If you own an undeveloped lot, the assessment rate is the same rate that's used for business, which is 29%. Once you put a house on it and it's taxed at the residential rate, it drops by essentially 29% in this case down to 8.9, now probably under 8%. So what's confusing to me here is that it's being valued rather highly, but it's being taxed as if it was already part of a residential lot. And that's what I find rather curious here.
And that brings up another question that I was questioning here. On the paper that I had just received from Mr. Callahan, it says zoning forestry. Okay? Then on the appraisers, it calls it suburban. And on this other one, it calls it family residential land. What is it?
Well,
the zoning in the laws, I think,
yeah.
Before.
I can't vouch for the appraiser.
Right.
I don't know, David, could you shed some light on this?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I understand the issue. The problem here is the terms. Forestry is the zoning and has been for decades. Other people use other terms for their own purposes. The appraiser's office has their own terminology for listing land that they appraise a certain way, and so do appraisers in the private market. And so that's where your confusion comes from. If they had all listed the official zoning, they would have all said the same thing, in this case, forestry. Mm-hmm.
So forestry doesn't imply that there are no houses on the property?
No, ma'am, it does not.
Okay. To me, being from Kansas, it implies it. Okay. Are there any questions that you want to ask me before I have my son-in-law speak to you? I hope you can see how there's confusion here. What I really would like is for it to, my request is that it be put on two separate lots on two separate deeds that are classified as buildable sites. That's really what I'm after.
Okay, you do understand.
And what I thought I had.
Okay, you do understand that would, if that were to be done, that would lead to a substantial increase in your tax bill. Okay.
Good.
Thank you. Okay, further testimony, please.
I'm Frank May. I'm Beverly's son-in-law. And as she stated before, I've lived on the property for roughly 7 years now. So I am pretty familiar with both parcels, as far as one of the big issues that had been brought up that I wanted to address was where they talked quite a bit about the stream. The surveying plats where they show Willow Creek here, I don't think it really gives that clear of a view of what the stream actually does as it runs through the property. When it's on the back parcel, it tends to run further away from the road towards the mountain. And as it comes up to the front of the property, to the first parcel, then it breaks over towards the road and runs along the front half of the property. When I look at that back parcel, which, and I think Mr. Callahan pointed it out, there is a relatively sloping or somewhat level area towards the back of the west of that parcel. And that's what on that parcel we feel is visible. We did, during the first, up until 2 years ago, kept horses on the property. So in caring for them at all different times of the year, I was out on that back parcel and moving around there. And it had been pointed out to me that they felt that that was really wet back there. At the time, both times that someone from the Land Use Commission and also the guy that does the environmental studies came out, we were melting off 27 inches of snow. Of course, it's going to be wet back there. Now, when I walked back there, and as far as the horses using it, when you get onto that back parcel, the area from the stream up to the road stays relatively dry. I mean, I've never had a problem back there with anything sinking in or, you know, it being extremely marshy. So I've always felt that that area was buildable. Other points that we wanted to make was that if the county wanted to put restrictions on the size of a house and as far as environmental concerns, as far as the type of septic system, that sort of thing, and limited encroachment on the trees and the environment, that is how we'd intended to build anyway if the time does come that we can afford to build. You know, we would want to work with the county as far as being sure that what we do is environmentally friendly. You know, by no means do we want to take out any more of the aspens than we have to, any of that sort of thing, or put in any kind of a system that might encroach on the stream. You know, my thoughts back there, the existing house does have a leach field out in front. When you look at the photograph that shows the front of the house, the leach field is directly out in front there. On that back parcel, I don't think a leach field would be a good idea. I think we'd have to be working more with some type of a septic system that would have to be pumped out, you know, to protect the stream because the property does slope towards it. So I hope that stuff helps some as far as in what we've been able to see in this as far as whether it's buildable or not, you know, and what things we're willing to do as far as working, you know, with the environmental concerns that have been brought up. And other than that, unless you have any other questions, I'm not sure how much more I could add, but I hope that gives you some idea of, you know, what we're dealing with as far as the property and the existing septic system.
Questions? Thank you. Further testimony?
It's raining outside, by the way. My name is Bob Donovan. I live at 17905 Colorado Highway 7. And I'm approximately probably 2 miles away from the property in question. I'm just, you know, here as an interested citizen. The letter of concern, as the way I read this, the major concern is the septic system and the pollution of the stream, which the county, in my understanding, already has regulations on that. So that would be taken care of in the application for the septic system. I thought it was two parcels, too. And when your staff came up and said it was on 1D, the regulations are clear about 35 acres and about 5 acres. You gentlemen have the power to give an exemption to that. Considering the confusion involved when the present owner went to buy it and being listed as two parcels and the property tax giving two separate property tax for this parcel, it's very understanding that she would think that she had two parcels. And if the building lot is buildable on the county regulations, and if the present owners, as he just said, is willing to work with the county to make sure they meet all the requirement, I don't see a problem. Recommend that you give an exemption to the 35 acres as long as they meet the rest of the qualifications and the requirements of the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Further testimony? You can't fool me. You don't live up there.
I guess you got me pegged, Paul. Dick Shalosky, 1160 North 119th Street. As you know, this is part of the confusion with the merger issue, and may or may not be something that's being worked out as we speak. I understand there are language in the works by the Land Use Department that's addressing at least the 93 issues, I hope.
Just to be clear, that would be addressing the 93 mergers. This has nothing to do with that.
This is not under that.
This is not under the 93 issues. However, as far as I'm concerned, it is a merger issue. And that's what I want to offer to you as my opinion for what it's worth or not worth. As you are probably aware, Senate Bill 67 requires that parcels that are merged from some point in time forward, and it's not real clear in the bill exactly when that is, be combined onto one tax deed at a minimum. And that, as you've heard at the testimony from everybody so far, has not been done on this parcel as of this date. So whether or not these parcels have successfully been merged, I would argue, is, at least in my mind, subject to, at the very least, interpretation. I think that the Land Use Department, in their current activities regarding the merger situation, has been addressing parcels that are contiguous, that are under the same ownership. And hopefully these sorts of situations are going to go away in the near future. And it's not going to be a booby trap for people like these people who bought, I think, these parcels in good faith with the understanding that they were buying two separate pieces of property that were both buildable. As far as the business about one deed being de facto or some legal term indication that properties are intended to be merged, I don't buy it. I was present at the hearing that you had with the Menards fairly recently about land that is out in my neck of the woods, and their testimony was that this was common practice, that when they bought their property, they were under the impression that they were buying two separate lots, and the owner supplied them with a deed that put both of them on the same deed. I don't have it with me today. I would have brought it had I had I understood this was about this particular issue, as Mr. Callahan has indicated, it was a little confusing. But there's a deed on my property that combines way, way, way back a quarter section of land in Boulder County with a couple of lots in Erie. If we accept staff and the county's argument that a single deed combines the lots, I guess those lots were combined back in 18-whatever. I think you're on very weak ground, and you're looking at me a little bit skeptically here.
No, I'm just curious. These are ones that are always, and I'll ask David to go into it. The situation with the Menards was somewhat different because there was a timing issue there, which was on the order of a month or so in terms of when papers were filed. I'll ask David some of the questions about the differences between this merger, mountain mergers, and other things, because there are some differences between all of these that is sometimes not clearly understood. Mm-hmm. And actually, all I was doing was trying to listen carefully, because this is an area where, and it historically has been sometimes difficult for people to understand.
Well,
the differences between lots and parcels, and when one exists and when one doesn't exist.
My particular take on this is I think the county was gravely in error, I think that's a fair term, in not making it clear if it was combining lots, that the lots were combined. You've got the case here where you've got the separate tax deeds, and I can see absolutely no excuse for going for 1958 and probably previously if these lots were combined continuing with separate tax deeds. It blows my mind. I think I'll leave you with that on that particular subject. I did want to comment on item 7 here in Mr. Callahan's write-up about the comprehensive plan. It talks about conflicts with various aspects there, and it says on some of them that the county may preserve whatever feature by means of appropriate dedication during the development process, reasonable conditions imposed through the development process, or by acquisition. I guess if you're not going to approve this lot split, there's not going to be any development, so that goes out the window. The other alternative that they give you here is to do something by acquisition, and if you choose not to approve this, I would recommend that you fork over some money to make the buyers whole. And other than that, I echo the comments of the previous gentleman. I think engineering a decent septic system for at least one of these properties, if not both of them, is the cure to most of the problems, and that's a matter of engineering.
Okay. Well, I would just suggest that, having looked at these tax documents here, that no matter which way we go, someone should fork over a lot of money to someone else, because either it's potentially been overtaxed or grossly undertaxed, depending on which. There would be errors both ways.
Well, think that the county is responsible for making tax bills and assessments and what have you, and the state allows people that have overpaid their taxes to go back 2 years.
Correct.
I wouldn't suggest that the county try to recover more than that at the very most. The county is responsible for coming up with a fair assessment. The landowner has the opportunity to contest that. If neither of them can come up with an agreement, you go to court.
That's the avenue for that. With the understanding, the assessor does not get to create or destroy parcels depending on how they assess land.
Well,
and they've, believe it or not, they have misidentified them in the past.
Yeah, well, I don't think any of us ought to claim to be perfect. I'm certainly not going to. Okay.
But at any rate, Mr. Chair, if I might, David, could you go into, because I think this is frequently a confusing issue. Maybe we can go back to the Menards and what the issue was there. But under the single deed, how long has the county had a policy about that? How is that different than mountain merger regulations?
I can't say with certainty how long the county has had a policy, because when I was looking for that answer, I talked to Ken Zebarth on our staff, who's our oldest member in the land use department, with the longest tenure, I mean, and his answer was as long as he could remember, and that predated, what he meant by that was it went further back, and he'd actually been here, and he's been here longer than 20 years. So he'd looked at records, and maybe Barbara has an answer to that.
Well, Barbara spent more time looking at these things than anyone else I know.
Barbara Andrews, Assistant County Attorney. I have not thoroughly researched the issue. However, I have researched it from time to time and have found documentary evidence in the Land Use Department showing that the deed interpretation of the term parcel has been in effect since at least 1965. So that is quite a long time ago. This deed combination occurred somewhat prior to that, but certainly this is the kind of combination that would have been considered to have been merged into a single parcel under a very longstanding county land use policy. That policy was then codified into the text of what was then the county zoning resolution in 1983. So that was a codification of what was considered to be longstanding administrative practice. That was one form of merger, and then a second form of merger, which actually overlapped with this, I suppose you could consider this property double merged, would have been what we call commonly the mountain merger provision that was passed for substandard parcels in the mountainous areas of the county held in the same ownership on or after May 19th, 1993. So this property was it's a separate merger provision. Both merger provisions affect this property. But as David explained earlier, this was merged notwithstanding the mountain merger provision, which has been somewhat controversial of late. And, of course, staff is working on that. But this was also combined under the longstanding deed merger provision and administrative interpretation within the Land Use Department.
If this property had been merged under, you know, say it had been on two separate deeds and it had been merged under the 1993 provision, we would consider it a prime candidate for unmerging, wouldn't we?
Only if we changed the rules and decided to let all of them be unmerged.
That's right. I mean, under that standard that we're considering.
Whatever the new rule would be, maybe, but not certainly under the current code.
A request to unmerge under that provision would be the exact same request you have here, and the same criteria would apply. And I don't think you've made a determination as to those criteria yet.
Okay, thank you. Further testimony. We have further testimony. Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. It's the pleasure of the board.
These forms always trouble me. I think one of the concerns I have that if we're going to reverse county policy that's almost 40 years old, how many of these would we be doing then? If this has essentially been county policy going back to 65, if not earlier, then should we do this for everything up there?
Well, and I personally don't think we should. And I even think that the material that we've been provided indicates that the price that was paid really for this property, notwithstanding the feeling that it was two parcels, was essentially similar to the price paid for similar properties at the same time anyway. Kind of the representation that this is two parcels comes from the previous owners and from the appraiser. Actually, the tax bill, as we discussed, has been treated as if it were merged or if they were together, because otherwise you wouldn't have gotten the residential rate on the other parcel. It could have been less.
Well, I think the confusing thing there is the land was actually valued at more than the other parcel. But again, it was being assessed at a rate of already developed residential land, which if it was considered a separate building lot, it wouldn't have been.
Well, Tom, yeah, the what it looks to me like was that the actual value of the land was at 56.8, and the actual value of the land with the house was at 56,800, and then
the first parcel, the land was valued, and I forget what the sizes of these were. the land was valued at 26.7 actual value.
Where, which page are you on?
I'm looking at 2000 taxes payable in 2001.
Okay. And I was looking at this one,
this page. I was looking at the letters size page.
If you look at the two tax statements,
okay.
It says the value of the land for the first one was $26,700.
Oh, I see
what
you're saying.
The improvements is $64,000. On the other parcel, the value of the land is $56,800, which is actually more than the first one. Mm-hmm. But it's being assessed at a residential rate,
right.
Which indicates that it's not a vacant lot ready to be built. And so I'm not quite sure what the assessor was thinking, or whoever did this when this was put together.
Well, this is a mixed bag. I would actually vote to separate them. And the reason is that you had two addresses, you had two tax bills for a very long time. Just judging from the cover letter here, I don't think that the previous owner thought he had anything except two parcels there. If a merger took place, I think it took place almost incidentally and without him recognizing it. The most compelling evidence against it is the tax evidence. But when I look at it, a lot of the... We would not be creating something inconsistent with the area. It's a bunch of small lots strung out along the road. I do think if it were unmerged, it would make good sense to put a size restriction on the house and make it clear that site plan review is there. But it kind of has more the feeling of a gotcha than it does.
Boy, I don't feel that, Paul. It's a 1958 kind of thing. I mean, it happened since 1958. It's what this parcel has been for the entire time.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. May I offer a little bit of clarification on a few things, because I don't want to leave some things hanging that might cause you to go one way or the other. On the 58 point, we stopped researching it at 58 because at that point the property had gone into receivership. And when that happens in any given year, it can be 40, 50 or more records to search, or thousands of them, depending on the year. And so I didn't have a way to go beyond 58 with any expediency. So it may very well have been that this goes further back than 58. It may have been that it was combined on 58. I don't know. So I'm sorry, that's as far as we could carry that one. On the vault idea and the septic system, vaults are not allowed by our public health department for anything but seasonal purposes, and so that wouldn't work. And there is a requirement of at least 50 feet from any water course, 10 feet from any property line, 5 feet from any home. You add those things together, it's going to be tough to squeeze a septic field that meets law in on this property without it being in a wet, very wet area. And there is some evidence from the environmentalists and our parks and open space staff that we've argued over and over again in the last 8 years I've been here, that 50 feet is not sufficient for a septic field from a stream. On the matter of the tax part of this, I think what you've, Commissioner Stewart, has brought up is that it really is an indicator of the assessor's understanding that this was one property for at least some years, or it would have been at the different tax rate, is the experience I've had on these.
I'm sorry, would have been a different what?
At the higher tax rate that you mentioned, yeah. Mr. Mayor. So the only other thing I have to add is that this is the sort of case is excruciatingly difficult for the staff, too, because you know you're dealing with a person's livelihood and their ability to help their offspring, and that's just hard. So it's hard for us, too, and I've done the best I know how in this case to look at every detail and give you all the facts so that you'd have the best basis to make a decision.
I do feel in a quandary about this, but I mean, part of the difficulty I also feel is that this may not be a buildable lot. Yeah. And
that's the part that's most troubling.
I feel like I'd be exchanging one set of problems for another set of problems that, you know, maybe you two won't be visiting, but I know I would. David, how would a lot determination be made here?
You mean if in a site plan review?
Yeah. I mean, would it be, could it be determined that this lot just isn't buildable under county code?
Oh, you mean through the site plan review process?
Right.
Well, if you were to approve this today, it becomes a building lot. Through the site plan review process, we could determine that the proposed house and septic field are not a proper fit on the land and recommend denial. But that's the sort of thing that would come to you as an appeal, and then you'd have to make that decision.
But in that case, Barbara, someone could go to court and say that the county regulations notwithstanding, that we'd have to allow something even if it essentially violated our regulations. Is that correct?
Well, once you recognize a lot, there is an expectation of some kind of reasonable development. Whether denial of that based on lack of adequate septic would be sufficient to overcome some kind of takings claim, I mean, certainly there would be an argument that that's a health and safety consideration, and therefore there would not be a legitimate takings claim. But once you do declare it as a buildable lot, then it does raise those issues. And this is really a cart before the horse kind of issue, because you simply do not have the information on whether a septic could go there. It appears that it would be very problematic to have one there, but you don't know for sure.
You know, and just in terms of the equity issue here, the equities are one of them. When you look at the appraisal form here that says that this parcel was purchased for $147,000, this entire piece of land, 5 acres or 4.32, then there, the next two parcels that are described are parcels that are single parcels with a house, similar kind of house on it, where the purchase price was $145,000 and $148,000, which says to me that notwithstanding the interest of the owner to have more than one parcel recognized here, that the price paid was really very similar to what the price would be paid for that kind of property in Allen's Park at the time. One of the parcels was 0.2 acres. One of the parcels was 1 acre. So I just think on the equity side of this, there was an equity in the transaction, and to grant more parcels would create more than the equity. So.
Okay. Well, somebody make a motion.
Well, I would move that we accept staff recommendation and deny this request.
I'm going to second this.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Nay. Thank you.